The following shiur has been presented by Rav Daniel Dombrov, Dayan at the Beis Havad, and has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center.
Before we begin, I just want to give a small disclaimer that the halachas that we are going to be discussing are very much relevant halacha l'maisa, and the purpose of these shiurim is just to give us a little bit more of a time and a feel for the inyanim that we'll be discussing. But by no means should be used halacha l'maisa. One should certainly seek guidance from a rav should these issues come up in an area of l'maisa. We discussed in the last year the fundamental difference and background of ksamim, which it is a tumah derabanan. Just a brief recap is, when the woman does not have a hargosha, a sensation, and a ria, sensing that the dam is leaving the guf, but rather just is moitze a kesem, just discovers a kesem, finds dam, so midaraisa she would not be tamei. However, midarabanan, the rabbanan gave her a din tuma, and she will have a din tuma, a midarabanan in that situation. We had mentioned that there are, because it's the Rabbanon, there are a few kulos which we're going to go through Be'ezus Hashem in this shir, where the Din Rabbanon will allow us to be mekel in specific circumstances. So, the first kula we're going to discuss is the kula of Pachas Mikagris. When the dam that's discovered is smaller than the size of a gris, and exactly what a gris is the earlier paiskim give numbers like based on a certain amount of saris, a certain hairs in a certain area. There's a coin mentioned also in conjunction to this, the iser. Now, I think in different places, they use different shiurim. So, some places go with the American penny, that being the shiur kegris, and it would only be tummy if it's larger than the size of an American penny. Other places are more machmir, go with the shiur of a dime. Now, I will mention, parenthetically, that a few years ago, I was in a Jewish museum, that they had coins from way back when, and the person who ran the museum actually showed me this iser, which was really, really small. Safe to say, it's definitely not larger than a dime. Okay, nonetheless, that is what the paiskin and the minuch that is prevalent in some places to go with the penny. So, what's the reason for this kula? Why does it have to be larger than a gris? So the reason is because we say that when it's less than that size, it could very well be attributable to a macholis. A macholis is a type of insect, a bug, some sort of bug that was common. And to quote the Lashon Chazal, is that ein lecha kol sadin shein malei tipeis dam, that it was a fairly normal and regular occurrence that a person would find little spots of dam on their sheets from these insects. So therefore, when we see something like that, it's really not a cause for concern. Woman finds a little bit of dam, so that's quite normal and doesn't really raise any alarms that this is dam nidus. And therefore we Chazal are matirit. And so we have to understand, how does this work? Let me bring it out with a specific question, which we'll see clearly what, you know, where we're going with this. There's a halacha discussed as a shach in the beginning of Kuf Pei Gimel, and really the shach is rather terse, but the Tiferes Yisrael, which is Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz, is a little bit more elaborate. It's Medayik in the Shach. Now, what would be in a situation where we know for sure the dam came from her guf? But Lisa, she saw it actually leaving the guf. There was no hargasha, but it was vadei migufa. So let's think for a moment. The reason, and again, it's less than a gris. So if the reason why we're being matir less than a gris is because we could attribute it to this bug, and this case, obviously, that's not what's going on. Obviously, over here, we saw it leaving her guf. We saw it came from her guf. So there's no way to attribute it to the machoilas. And the Tiferes Yisrael learns up in the Shach that it's usher in that situation. The Torah Shlomim, on the other hand, argues, and he says, no, it's going to be mutzer. And the reasoning would be that, true, the reason why we're making less than a gris is because of these bugs, but because it was so common, Chazal were never geyser on less than a gris. The gezeirah of ksamim, which we said is the Rabbanon, was never implemented on less than a gris. So if you go like the Torah Shlomim, so then obviously that would work for today as well, where we really don't have the tzad of macholas, that would work, because they're never geyser. However, there's a halacha, definitely a strong motion to say we go with the other shita, the shita which is the machmir, and to say that it's a problem and it's vadei migufa. So that being the case, that means we have to actually have the tliya of macholas. We have to actually be able to attribute to macholas. And I think today in most places it'd be really far fetched to suggest that this small kesem is a result of machilas, as a result of this bug. So how are we able to explain it today to make it work? So B'lid Chassam Sefer explains that the main impetus for the Gzeira of Ksamim was when they kept Taharas, when they were makbet on Tumah v'Tahara, and they Be'ikar were giving, the Be'ikar gave the Gzeira of Ksamim as part of maintaining a certain standard of Tahara. Today, unfortunately, it's not something which is relevant. We don't keep Tumah Tahara today. However, nonetheless, Chazal's Gzeira went into effect, and it remains in effect. Says Chassam Sefer that in the days of when Ksamim existed, Machalas were common. So today, we're going to keep the Gzeira, even though it doesn't really have a good reason to apply today. But we're going to keep it anyways because that's what Chazal instituted and it remains in place. But we're not going to go ahead and raise the bar over what was back in the days of Chazal. So although Machalas were prevalent then and were common then and not today, and logically today we should not be allowed to use a Machalas, but we're only going to keep it. In other words, the whole Gzeira of Ksamim today is also what was then. So we're going to keep it today as if it was back in the day when we had Taharis. So we're kind of imagining that we're back in those days of Tumah Tahara. So that same imagining that we're back in the days of Tumah Tahara also would include that there's Macholas in. So if it's Vadei Migufa, that would always have been a problem. Back then it would have been a problem as well. But when there's a possibility of Machalas then, so in the Chabayel Chedushai, we would view it, when the woman today has the Kesem, we view it as if it's happening in the days of Tumah Tahara. And therefore, we go back in time, and we're going to say, oh, what was back then? And back then it would have been okay, because the Machalas, today we're not going to go ahead and increase the tumah over what would have been back then. So that's as far as the shear of Gegris. Now, exactly what's called Vada Nigufa regarding our other point, generally speaking, the Pesachim are pretty liberal to say what, in other words, Vada Nigufa is quite limited. It has to be really, really Vada Nigufa. For halacha lemaisos, leave it, each person should consult with their Maria Hira. But to just, I'm just mentioning that, you know, that point that not everything which we would imagine is going to necessarily qualify for Vada Nigufa. Let's move on to the next kula. The next kula is that of a beged tabua. We have a colored beged. The idea would be that we don't have a. We explained that a kesem is the idea. You find a kesem, you see a smoking gun, you see something clearly pointing to nidus. So we have no choice but to acknowledge that this situation, that there is a kesem, and therefore we're going to give her the dintumah like the dam has, but it has to be where it strikes us very clearly. And anytime there's a beged tzavua, it's lacking in that clarity, and therefore Chazal were never geizer when you find it on a beged tzavua. As far as what qualifies for a beged tzavua, here as well, the Paiskim are pretty brait in what's considered tzavua. Pretty much anything which is a color rather than an off-white will be nichal in this heter. Then obviously there's an area which is going to be unclear whether it's off-white or already moved on to the tans. Again, that will leave for the discretion of each individual rav. And I believe the Ramah suggests that women should wear big day tzavuim because we're not looking for an issue. When we have a kesem, we have no choice but to dub the isha tameh like the din of the dam. But it's not something we're looking for. And therefore, if we could, adarabba, we could avoid it is good. And therefore, we're going to suggest for women to wear big adam tzavuim, be made tahara. Then we have another kula as well, which is the kula of in a makabel tumah. When the object that the dam was found on is not makabel tumah. So going back to the idea we had spoken about last year, mentioned it briefly today, that the din kesem is based on the fact that since the place where the dam had gone will get a din tumah because of the din of the tumah of the dam itself. Therefore, we give the woman the same din. But in a situation where the place where the dam was discovered itself is not subject to tumah, is not makabel tumah, so there we won't have that techruch, and therefore it will allow the isha to remain tahar. Now, exactly what falls under the realm of makabel tumah is a little bit beyond the scope of our discussion. Just, I guess the most common area of question is the area of paper, which comes up really more by, a tissue used for kinuach, kinuach meraglayim. We'll just leave it as, that's an area of discussion. We're not going to go into it right now, the details of that nidin. I just want to go back for a moment to talk about a case by beged tavur, which is could be relevant, which is when the dam will go through. Let's imagine the person has a bed sheet which is tavua, and then underneath is the mattress pad, which is usually going to be white. So suppose the dam would go through the sheet and go to the mattress pad. So that will have that. In other words, even if it didn't go straight from the Isha, we will have to be metami her based on if the mattress pad is sufficient to have a marit meya. We will be metami her even though it did go through that other sheet in between. We're dealing with it a little bit tersely because each one of these has room for a lot more discussion, but just to try and give the basic synopsis of the theorem, let's just go to the fourth one, which is tliya, where you could be tele, whether you have something else to attribute the dam to. And in the days of the Gemara, this was the common example was where a woman is walking in the marketplace, and there are people shechting left and right, and it was quite common that there was blood spurting all over the place from the person shechts the cow in the shuk. There's going to be a lot of dam, and it could go anywhere. So a person went through that shuk and was exposed to those potential spraying of dam. So when they find dam on their beged, again, it's not necessarily a cause for alarm. And obviously, we don't mean under the beged taftin, which would be impossible for the dam of the shechita to have gone there. We're talking about something which is a legitimate, realistic possibility that it came from the dam shechita in the shuk. Then that would be an example where we don't have that hechra. We don't have the motza kesem where there's something staring us in the face saying that there's dam here, and that means it's probably dam nidus from har, because we have that possibility that's liya of the dam shechita. Now, it doesn't have to be a vaday that is dam shechita, obviously, because then we wouldn't have a suffix. But it has to be that the tliya, the potential tliya, has to be a vaday. In other words, she for sure went through the marketplace where shechitas were going on. Now, was this from the shechita, or was it from her? That's an unknown, and in that case, we will not be metamir, but rather be tailor. But we do have to have the tliya has to be a vaday, and at that point, even though obviously it's unclear where it's from, we won't be metamir. Just say over one modern example of a tliya, which is an interesting maisa. It's unusual today that we have tliyas. I guess occasionally you could have a person has some sort of abrasion that's a potential cause for the dam. But here in this story, there was a woman, a couple who went out for an evening or for an afternoon, and the woman's younger sister was the babysitter. Anyways, subsequently, the woman finds a kesem on her sadin, on her, and she then brought it to Rav. And the Rav is looking at it, and he looks up and says, "You know, this is dam from a besula. This is dam from a woman, a young woman who is a besula." She looks at him like, "What are you talking about?" So he says, "Yeah. She was married, she had children, this is an impossibility." So he was emphatic. He said, "You go figure it out, I'm telling you what it is." So anyways, she went and she did a little sleuthing and discovered that her sister, when she was babysitting, had taken the liberty of taking a nap in her bed, and this younger sister at that time was experiencing her rhea, her period, and that was actually until we had found our potential. We said we found our potential cause for this dam, and there we go. We have our tliya, and that cleared her, and this kesem was able to be attributed to that, and it was matahar. So it's obviously also a rare example, but something which. A modern example of a tliya, which would take off the zeras kesem, would take off the dintuma of the kesem from the isha. Be'ezus Hashem, in our next year, we're going to discuss situations where even Dan without a Hargasha or an obvious Hargasha will be considered Tamei, potential Tamei Daraisa. We have discussed in the last couple of Shiurim, the halachas of Kisamim, which is where a woman finds Dam. There was no Riya, there was no Hargasha, there was no sensation indicating the Dam exiting her gup, but rather she discovered it, and Midaraisa would be Tahar, Midarabanan. Nonetheless, Rabbanan gave a din tuma to it. And we had discussed various kulos that apply in the situation of Kisamim. There are a couple of, there's a few scenarios which are discussed in the Paiskim that there is no obvious Hargasha, and nonetheless might be a Tumu Daraisa. And the basic idea that runs through all of them is that there are all situations where there's a different experience going on, where there's some sort of pressure, the Isa Makim. And that potential, that could possibly disguise and cover over the Hargasha of the Nidus. In other words, to say that the woman may really be having a Hargasha, may be experiencing a Hargasha of Nidus, but it's obscured from the other event that's taking place at the same time. So the first case we'll talk about is the case really brought up in the Mishnah back on Daf Yudalit in Nida, where Dam is discovered immediately after Zivuk. Immediately after Tashmish, they find Dam. And over there we say that if it was immediately afterwards, then we're going to assume that whereas immediately afterwards, it was clearly not from, it was from the during the time of Zivuk. The Ziva could have disguised the Hargasha, and there's a stama, there's a klal that ain't dam b'la Hargasha, that's a stama chazaka that dam b'la Hargasha, it's a chazaka that dam comes b'la Hargasha, and therefore we're going to actually be mechayev you a korban should you find the dam immediately after, even though there was no obvious Hargasha. Now the mission gives another example which wouldn't have to be right away, which is where the Ish found it on by his aver, he finds the dam. So that even if it's not right away, but clearly it was from the Zman Zivug, and that would be an issue even if it was found later. Now, if it wasn't done right away, if the Kinuach by the Isha was done slightly after, then that will create a matzav of Asham Talia Safik. And if it was after that frame, then it would be, then it's going to be tahar. And the idea is, Chavazas explains, that really she has a cheskas taira. So we really would, the chazaka would say that she's tahar. So once we don't see the dam coming right away, the chazaka will say the dam came later. And later means past the period where we have this chash hargasha, and therefore we'll assume it came later, and then we'll see that there's no hargasha, and therefore she's going to be tahar. Now, there's a discussion exactly how long we're dealing with in, as far as, in the minutes or seconds on the clock. We'll come back to it, in a little bit. And just to say over an interesting Maisa Shahaya, where there was a couple that had been involved in Zivug, and subsequently, not necessarily right away, they were mekaneach, and sometime later they look at the beged that they were mekaneach. Both parties were mekaneach, and they discover there were two areas of the beged that had clearly been used for kinuach. One of them had dam, and one did not. Now the question is, which party was that from? If it was from the isha. And like we said, it wasn't right away, so everything will be okay. Let's say it was less than a gris, or one of the other atayrim we have in Ksamim. If it was from the Ish, then it's going to be a problem. And so
We'll leave the question at that. It's beyond the scope of our discussion to do a full analysis of that question, but it's just kind of highlights this chiluk of the chashash hagasha between the ish v'isha. Let's move on to the next case, which is the some paiskim shtel this too to the case where a woman is matal meiraglayim. She passes water and when she's mekaneach, she discovers dam. Now, there's really a whole other dimension to this case, which is also not something we're going to discuss, which is the Mishnah in the ninth parak talks about it from the other angle, that if we find dam b'shas me'reglayim, that actually might be a siman of tahara, because during the hatas me'reglayim, it's the dam, the rechem is inaccessible, and there's not really possible for the dam to go that route, and it would adarab would indicate that it was some sort of mum makeh in the kidneys or in some other internal area producing the meraglayim, and therefore that would actually be, like I said, a sibah of tahara. However, when it's afterwards, then the concern becomes that perhaps the meraglayim, the pressure there disguised the hargasha, and therefore we have that concern that maybe there was a hargasha and not realizing it, and that would be an issue of a safek deraisa here. So the question now becomes, how, like we said before, how soon does it have to be to have this concern? So Rav Moshe has two tshuvas where he gives two different shiurim. I don't think they're arguing. They're two different ways of describing the amount of time. In one tshuva, he describes it that the norm, that a person conducting themselves in the normal fashion, without rushing, would normally by the time the tzar kinuach would have already be out of the danger zone, so to speak, out of the period which has this chash. And would not be a concern. And talking about he says, let's say in a situation where a person is rushing to exit the Beis HaKisei, for example, there's a phone ringing, a child screaming or something like that, there the person's rushing, and then already we have we run into the risk that it was close enough that it would have this chashash of hargasha. So that's obviously something which is a little bit difficult to quantify. In a different shuvah, Moshe gives a different shiur, which is maybe a little easier to work with, which is that he explains that the meiraglayim process, there's first a kiluach, a strong flow, and it's followed by a residual drip, like tipin, and when that ends, in other words, the kiluach would be what would disguise the hargasha, the tipin, the general time frame that would take, by the time that ends, that would be already clear the area of concern, and one would be okay. So, like I said, I think the two tshuvas kind of reflect each other, that if a person's not in a rush, they would normally wait for that to subside, and that's, it just gives us a little bit more, something more quantifiable to work with as far as the time frame. So that's as far as the case of meraglayim. There's a third case as well, which is by a bedika. When a person does a bedika, so we do bedikas churin and stuck, and we move it. We put in this moich. We put in the little aid, the little beged, and the isha moves it around to have a proper bedikah done. That again is creating pressure and also could possibly disguise the hargasha. And therefore, when if we're gonna find dam, so we have obviously the problem we know is migufa. But so let's imagine the there's a small red spot on the small red spot on the aid. So it's less than a gris. So we spoke about in the earlier shiur, if when it's vade migufa, if we could be matir, it's that we saw machlekes. Over here, even the ones who are mekel, but in our case, since there was that pressure, Therefore, you run to the other concern of achshash argasha, and we're not going to be able to treat it with the kulas of ksamim. Therefore, it's going to be a problem. There is one more point here which I want to mention, which is that when we have a kesem, which does not have one, is not one of these three situations, and we will have the heter of ksamim. Nonetheless, there are some paiskim that have prescribed like a waiting period of 24 hours, where this way you give like a little bit of a buffer zone, because when we have a kesem which is unexplainable, it is in a sense like a cause of concern that maybe even though it itself is tahar gomer, however, maybe something's brewing, and these paiskim have, based on their vast experience, have unfortunately encounter too many cases where people ran into trouble. Now, technically, there may be a cheskas taira, and so the person didn't necessarily do something wrong if it wasn't this man of vest. But nonetheless, we find the lashon haramah that when he talks about someone who's meizidam b'shas tashmish, and he talks about the person being shook up, and the way he describes it in strong language, it's not a situation a person wants to find himself in, and therefore this was the remedy to avoid that was to kind of wait a little bit. If a person knows clearly what it is, so that maybe it would be different, but when a person doesn't know what it is, then there's a high level of risk that maybe the person will end up running into real trouble. B'shas zivug. What about in a situation where the person is clearly having regular ksamim, which is not an indication of a riyah that's about to happen? So that's already something which may be a little different, and I would suggest kol achad yishol meir harasa on this question. One last point, which I really belongs to the last year, but I just want to close with this, which is, when we spoke about the idea of something being a riyah bezman hazeh, when a person has the real riyah versus the kesem, then there's that area where it's not that normal large amount of a period, but nonetheless it's more than the normal kesem. So that obviously is going to be sometimes get a little bit unclear, and there are some rough shiurim given how to ascertain whether it's Rio or not. But the shiurim given are based on two dimensions, just the length and the width, but there's obviously always there's a depth of the object absorbing the dam. So let's just leave it as something which one should ask a shayla, and even if one would have, let's say, begat tefuah, but when it's a significant amount, one definitely should show it to a Mayra to determine whether or not it can still be called a kesem, or already it's crossing the line into the world of a real Riyah.
The Daf Yomi Halacha series has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. To reach the center for halacha consultation, service, educational seminars, or media, please call 1-888-485-VAAD. That's 1-888-485-8223. To sign up to the BHHJ, the Beis Havad's weekly interactive e-journal, please visit www.bhhj.org, or you can email us at office@thehalachacenter.org.